the best soccer networks on US TV from best to worst. Paramount Plus gets a launch date for Champions League fans. Our thoughts on SiriusXM FC's soccer coverage. Step-by-step instructions on how to get ESPN's multicast working. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, this should be a fun episode. This is going to be a special episode focused primarily on ranking the best soccer TV networks. We've done this in the past before, I think probably on this podcast as well as on the website worldsoccertalk.com. But this is an updated list. This is updated based on our current feeling on how these broadcasters are doing. And this is primarily, well, this is actually only focused on television. So it's not streaming. We're not talking about Peacock or CBS All Access or those types of things. It's focused on the television coverage. So having said that, what was your thinking before you went ahead and went into this list? Did you have any preconceived notions or did you go in kind of with a clean state of mind and try to analyze these ideally?
Yeah, I think because we're talking specifically about television and the amount of television coverage devoted, it leans towards certain networks, right? And I think to me that's something that maybe is very different than if you're talking about TV and streaming. Because if you're talking about TV and streaming, I think your list ends up being a little, my list at least, will end up being very different.
Yeah, in future episodes, we'll probably do an episode focused on streaming itself, which is it's related, but in this case, it's not. So I think as we go on, it's the TV and streaming side is so interlinked. But right now, at least for television, while we still have television as a primary method of distributing soccer matches. For the most part, we're going to focus in on that. So what the way we did it, both Kartik and I did this independently, separately. So Kartik put together his list of his top eight. I did the same. They're not the same in terms of the results, but we did score each of them and then combine them together into a final eight. So, and actually a little bit later in the episode too, we've got a whole bunch of news and listener mailbag and other things we'll get to. But let's kick off by focusing on our top eight. And at number eight is Goal TV. Now, Kartik, I think for each of these, we can talk about pros and cons. The pros, to me, Goal TV still does a decent job at televising soccer matches. I mean, it's a 24/7 soccer channel. It's oftentimes it's one that a lot of soccer fans may not watch or may forget about. But they put on the Portuguese league, the Ecuadorian league, the Uruguayan league, etc. So that's on the positive side. They're still going. They're still providing a vital source of soccer matches. For me, the con would be, or the negative about Goal TV's coverage, is that the English language commentaries are really poor, really, really not well done, not very professional. If I was in charge of Goal TV in Miami, I would go ahead and hire some better talent to provide the commentary on the English language side, because it's not their first language. And it comes off as, I'm sure most of the viewers are Spanish language viewers watching Goal TV in Espanol, but on the English language side, a lot of room for improvement. But they're still alive, Kartik. This has been a channel for years and years and years that was going to go out of business, right? That was the rumor for many, many years.
Yeah, lots of speculation about what was going to happen to Goal TV for years and years and years. They're still with us. They're not on most cable systems. A lot of people don't recognize that they have the channel, but there are other folks that who do rely on them for certain leagues. So they are still very much active here, and they still have Goal TV operations in other countries in the Americas, which is something we sometimes forget when we talk about every single one of these channels. that we're talking about, with the exception of Telemundo, has some sort of although Telemundo via NBC, I guess what, has some sort of link to channels or media properties in other countries. And Gold TV, very much the U.S. market, was just one of many markets they went into. But they came in at the right time and acquired a ton of rights at one point in this country, and have gradually seen that wither away, as well as their presence on cable systems.
All right, so we're doing our countdown of the top eight soccer networks on U.S. television currently. And coming in at number seven is Fox Sports. Kartik, how about you? Go ahead and give some of the pros and cons and why you believe that Fox has a lower ranking than some people might imagine.
Yeah, because their coverage is quite sporadic now. They're out of the club business outside of MLS. They don't do a particularly thorough job of producing their content, and this is unfortunate because I think we bash Fox, and there's been this stereotype that this show and this website, our website, bashes Fox constantly. But I would say there was a period from about 2015, maybe from that summer when they had the Gold Cup and they picked up the rights to the Bundesliga, till about 2017 when they learned they lost the Champions League rights to Turner. In that period, I think we saw some massive improvements from Fox. And in between, in that period, they also broadcast the Copa America in 2016, and they were gearing up towards the 2018 World Cup. 2015 Women's World Cup, actually. That's when it started. So I think that maybe we have a reputation for bashing Fox a lot, but what we've seen since 2017, I think, is, okay, let's get to the 2018 World Cup, and then we'll begin to mail things in. And I think their coverage of the 2019 Women's World Cup was worse than their coverage of the 2015 Women's World Cup. I also think that they were very on the commentator side, they've lost people. They still have, in John Strong and Stu Holden, a good team, a good lead commentary team. But beyond that, it's a scattergun approach. And they mailed it in at the end of the Bundesliga season last season. After the restart, we didn't get any commentary from the people we had actually liked at doing Fox broadcasts for the Bundesliga. Keith Costigan, Warren Barton, and others. Ian Joy, thankfully, has moved on, and we get to see him on our televisions and on streaming elsewhere. But they have mailed it in. So that's why I rated them very lowly, and obviously you didn't rate them very highly either. That's why they come in at seventh.
Yeah, you ranked them dead last, eight out of eight. I ranked them at number seven. I had Gold TV as my eighth network. But with Fox, I mean, there are positives. So with Fox Sports, I would give them credit definitely for some of their hires. So and this may be on even on a independent contractor or kind of a part-time basis, but when they bring in a JP Delacamera, when they bring in Ali Wagner as a commentator, when they bring in Derek Ray, from time to time, they make some good moves as far as that side. I think in many ways, I mean, you mentioned about the Women's World Cup, and the last Women's World Cup wasn't as good as the 2015 one. But overall, I would say that Fox's coverage of the U.S. Women's National Team is pretty decent. On the U.S. Men's National side, I think it's a lot weaker. I like John Strong. I like Stu Holden. I just think that they are hesitant to be critical. And this has been going on for a long time. When the U.S. is performing poorly in a game or lacking creativity or lacking imagination, Stu Holden especially goes quiet. He's not really providing any real tactical awareness or criticism that, say, a Taylor Twellman would, where Taylor would probably let fly and say, hey, this is how I feel, this is ridiculous, the way that they're playing. Yes, this team is improving. Yes, this team has a long way to go. But that's my take on the U.S. men's side. On the club side, Kartik, you're right. I mean, they're pretty much out of the game, except for Major League Soccer. And really, it seems the only reason, the biggest reason that they want MLS and continue to want MLS is because those rights are tied with the U.S. Women's National Team and the U.S. Men's National Team. Now, if those were split and Major League Soccer sold their rights on a separate basis, I'm not so sure that Fox would be so gung-ho about Major League Soccer. I mean, hopefully they would, but I'm not so sure. But yeah, overall, I think it's one of those things. It's a strange watching Fox Soccer or Fox Sports these days, FS1, FS2, is a strange experience because we know, you and I know, how much of a impact Fox Sports had on soccer and the growth of soccer in this country for a long, long time. In the 1990s, the early 2000s, and beyond. And now it's filler. It's one of those things that from time to time they'll have more games on. So U.S. Women's National Team, they had a game on this week on television. They've got the rights to the Club World Cup, which is a FIFA property, which they are contracted to show. They have to show that. That's part of the FIFA Men's World Cup rights that they have as far as a package. But also they're showing the She Believes Cup. So they've got every single game of the they've got every single U.S. Women's National Team game from the She Believes Cup next month. So they seem to be really focused on tournaments other than Major League Soccer for the most part. But yeah, so there you go. So Fox Sports in at number 7. Straight in at number 6 is Telemundo. And Telemundo's come a long way, I think, in terms of, for a lot of us, the English language viewers who tune in to watch Spanish language television from time to time to watch matches. Telemundo has even had coverage of Premier League matches that's relatively new in the last few years. The production level is really strong. Andres Cantor, of course, is a legend, one of the best commentators in the game. Juan Pablo Angel and many others in terms of Manuel Sol, in terms of the talent that they have, are very well educated and very articulate in terms of the analysis that they gave the game. As far as a con, I guess I would like to see more coverage from Telemundo. I'd like to see, other than just Chivas home games from Liga MX, it'd be great to see more soccer coverage from Telemundo. And I'm sure that's something that they're working on. Copa America is coming up this summer. I'm sure they're interested. Well, I know that they're interested in those rights, but I'd like to see more. But for me, that was... where did I rate it, Kartik? I rated it... Actually, number 6 was my rating for Telemundo. And you also said number 6. And overall, in our overall rankings combined, it comes in at number 6. What are your thoughts about Telemundo?
Yeah, I think Telemundo has... what they've done is actually kind of interesting because they've focused on big events and on summer events that has allowed them to boost their ratings on the sports side to where they're actually getting more viewers than Univision overall, which is actually kind of shocking. But it's because they acquired the World Cup rights. They've had Copa America in 2019. They want to acquire 2021. So they've 2017. They had the Confederations Cup, which Mexico played in. So they have strategically used their summers and their summer and the summer calendar and summer tournaments to generate viewership. And as you said, they show the occasional Premier League match, generally like one match a week. This all having been said, there is a void of soccer coverage on Telemundo, which is why I rank them so low. I think that they have, as you said, the Manuel Souls and the Andres Cantor, the legend of all legends of American broadcasters of this sport. But it's sporadic. Their coverage of football, of soccer, their sister networks in the NBC family, NBC Universal family, do a far better job in terms of consistent penetration, and then obviously the rival networks of Spanish language networks over at Univision, in my opinion, do a far better job as well.
All right, so coming up now, number 5 out of our top 8 list, and we're counting down to our number 1 pick, but number 5 is beIN Sports. Now, beIN Sports is a channel that gets a lot of flack. It gets a lot of criticism. Some of it is not its own fault. A lot of it is distribution issues, such as Comcast Xfinity, DirecTV, Dish Network, etc. At the same time, though, too, if you look at the amount of coverage that beIN Sports gives to soccer, it's a lot. It is quite, quite, you can pick any day of the week And usually there's games on now. Those games could be the Turkish League. They could be La Liga. They could be the French League. They're not the biggest leagues from around the world by any means, but they have the rights in terms of the coverage. It is inconsistent at times. But once you get to know the talent, once you get to know the Thomas Rongans, the Gary Baileys, the Ray Hudsons, the Phil Shanes, the Dre Corderos, Eric Krakauer, George Metellus, et cetera, it's a tight crew. They definitely have a passion for soccer. In terms of some of the negatives or some of the cons, I would say that, It would be nice if actually they had some bigger games. And also, the other thing of it is sometimes they become a little bit predictable in terms of just the way that they produce the games. You're not going to get too many surprises. From time to time, you might get some analysis in some of their studio shows. But I think a lot of it, I think they've been impacted quite severely by a lot of budget cuts, but they're doing the best that they can and actually provide a really valuable service to soccer fans in the US. Without being sports, I have to wonder where some of these rights would go and whether we'd actually have access to these on television.
Yeah, so Chris, honestly, if we were doing this podcast and had done this list 4 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago, definitely 4 years ago, I think I have been number one on my list, even ahead of NBC at that point, because they were producing better shows. They were producing better kind of opinion conversations. They were doing a good job with their wraparound production of big matches, particularly big matches in Spain. All of that has fallen off. I think I ranked them maybe a little higher than you did in our individual rankings. But yeah, they dropped off for me. I echo everything you've said. And a lot of it is budget cuts. A lot of it is the cuts from cable systems, which I think they're related, right? They're related issues. But they still provide an important service. I completely concur with that. I think they have some really good commentators. Eric Krakauer is a guy I would single out as a guy that I think is really emerging as an outstanding a standout commentator of the sport in this country. But they're not where they were 3 or 4 years ago. In fact, I think when BN debuted in 2012, right in the U.S., we were blown away by what they provided, because they took a lot of the same talent that Gold TV had, but they elevated the production level, they elevated the conversation, they had better wraparound shows, and they brought in some people, you know, Kay Murray, Matteo Benetti, others that we weren't as familiar with in the U.S. Obviously, Matteo was from here, but hadn't been on air very much, and they had the George Metalysis and the Dre Corderos and the other Phil Shane, Ray Hudson, the other people they brought over from Gold TV. So, yeah, I'm kind of sad as we have this conversation, Chris, because being at one point was at the top for me. Now they're mid table, so to speak. I mean, it's like a title winning side that got broken up, and some of the players are still there, but they are now a mid table side. They're not even qualifying for Europe, if you want to take it in a league table terms.
Yeah, if you consider the exodus from BN Sports in the last few years, they include Ian Joy, who is now, of course, with CBS, as well as NYCFC, but then Jeremy St. Louis, who's at CBS, Terry Lee, who moved back to Canada, I believe, Kay Murray, you mentioned, Kevin Egan, who joined Fox Sports in, I think, Atlanta, and so on and so forth. I mean, Matteo Bonetti, who goes to ESPN. So a lot of talent has left, and they've stuck with the ones that they have, and the ones that they have are good. It's just that I don't see them acquiring any major rights in the near future. So I think a lot of this, again, through is just trying to keep the channel afloat through the next World Cup and for BN Sports and for Qatar to use that channel as a showpiece to go ahead and have content and live studio shows directly from Doha, even though that in the US, BN Sports will not have the rights to the World Cup. I'm imagining that they're going to have a lot of talent and focus on the country, the stories, just because they are tied to the Middle East there. All right, coming in at number four on our top 8 list of the top soccer TV networks, it is NBC Sports. And NBC Sports probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I would have put them at number one, hands down. I mean, no competition out there as good as NBC Sports. But both as you and I, Kartik, have felt that they've kind of really taken the focus off this channel in terms of what worked so well in the beginning, which was providing really thought-provoking, intelligent analysis. So much so that nowadays, in the past few months, I don't look forward to tuning in. I don't make a conscious effort of saying, okay, I have to tune in a half an hour early or an hour early to watch the pregame, or same thing with the halftime coverage or the post-match coverage. What I'm doing more and more of now is maybe watching a Bundesliga game that's in the morning. And then as soon as that's done and the kickoff is for whatever game it is on the Premier League, I'll watch that one, or I'll change my focus to that one. I'll probably actually have both games on, but I'm not really prioritizing that halftime, post-match or pre-game analysis as I used to. Now, in terms of the production value, it's fine. It looks good. It's high quality, but I think it's just part of it to me too. Also, Kartik, is that it's a little bit stale, and I think that the talent that they have, while they're good, we've been watching the same people saying the same things for the most part for the last 7 to 8 years, and it's definitely in need of a refresh, or at least a change up, a different style, a different method, something, because it's gotten a little bit predictable, as has beIN Sports. What about you, Kartik? Any additional thoughts on NBC Sports?
I would have had DN actually as number one a few years ago, and NBC is number two. But the consensus from both of us is that NBC and DN both were at the top then and have kind of drifted in the last 3 or 4 years. I actually wouldn't mind if they have the same people saying the same things, because then Kyle Martino would still be on the air, and Robbie Musto would be his old self. Now what they have, except when Danny Higginbotham, who was a huge addition and has been a breath of fresh air, but I think as we talked about on this show, is a freelancer for them, and we probably won't have after a certain point once the MLS season kicks off, won't have on in the NBC studio regularly. They're not saying the same things. It's beyond that. It's stale, maybe, because it's the same people, but they're saying different things, and they're saying less useful things, and they're saying things that are meant to I think, wind up fans of Big Six clubs. They're saying things that are meant to sensationalize storylines, the way Sky, their now sister channel, who was not their sister channel, by the way, when they were at the top of their game, does in the UK. And it's a shame we're recording this on Wednesday night. If we'd recorded it yesterday night, Leicester would have been top of the table, and I could have crowed a little bit and said, look, they don't talk about Leicester at all in their post-game shows or pre-game shows. They talk about them as if they're an afterthought. They're just another team, and I still point to the Leicester-Liverpool match, which Liverpool won, by the way, earlier in the season, when they spent the whole pre-game show talking about Liverpool's injuries and Van Dijk and this and that. And yes, I know Liverpool have a ton of injuries, and that was before Jota got hurt, so their problems have really kicked in once Jota got hurt, more than when Van Dijk got hurt. But in that match, Pereira was out for Leicester, who I think arguably was the second or third best right back in the league before he got injured last year, right? We hear about Trent Alexander-Arnold all the time, but there are other good right backs in the league. Ndidi was out, who I think is arguably, other than Vardy, the most influential player on Leicester. They had a number of other guys out also, but we never heard about that. So my complaint with NBC is they've gone Big Six heavy, and they've gone into sensational storylines. The Paul Pogba scandal of the day. And it's funny because I don't think Pogba is that scandal-driven. It's just that there's been a media narrative created about this player, this excellent player, by the way, one of the best players in the world, this media narrative that's been created by him that NBC has bought into lock, stock, and barrel. So, yeah, I am disappointed the way they dropped off, but Higginbotham coming in during the festive period was an upgrade. Rebecca Lowe is back from being away for a while, maybe a little bit refreshed, and you know, hopefully they can kick it back into high gear, because I do have to say their production value is still really high. So I think getting the production right, Chris, is actually harder than getting the talent right. So what I would say about Fox, the reason I think we always rated Fox so low was that they never got the production right. They eventually got the talent right. I know everybody seems to have an opinion of Alexi Lawless, but he can be good when he's on.
Yeah.
I think Holden is very good. I think may not want to hear that, but I think Fox, the reason I have consistently scored them very low compared to other networks, is because their production levels to me are nowhere near where NBC, CBS, ESPN are. So NBC still has the high production value if they can improve their talent and their bumper programming in terms of conversations and topics. They can storm right back up this list.
Yeah, I disagree 100% on that, Kartik. I think that Fox's production value, it looks slick. It looks well done. Their weakness really at the end of the day is the talent. You mean you look at the talent that they have, which now there's hardly anyone left. I think it's like Moadu and Alexi Lalas. And then Stu Holden, who they kind of take from the commentary booth and then put him back into halftime studio analysis. But even beyond that, even the crews that they had in the past in the studio, it was really lightweight questions, lightweight analysis and thoughts and opinions. And sometimes you wondered if they were watching the same game. But having said that, though, too, with NBC Sports for a second, I think one other thing about NBC Sports I've been a little bit disappointed with in the last couple of years, maybe perhaps, is they haven't really grown their network in terms of adding more soccer rights. They've shown some of the Liga MX games, the Chivas games, in English or sometimes in Spanish late at night. Now and again, but it would have been nice, or it would be nice for them to see about picking up some other rights. However, I don't think that they're that focused on that. I still think that the Premier League they're looking at that, I'm sure, and probably thinking, okay, how many more subscriptions can we get to Peacock based renewing the deal for another three to six years. And I don't think they're focused on soccer. It would be nice for them to have some additional coverage that they had the rights to, so they could talk about other things other than just the Premier League. You mean whether it's on the weekends or weekdays. But overall, I think NBC Sports' coverage is decent. I mean, you had them ranked number five on your top eight list. I had them ranked as number two. So I still think that they have value. I still think that they do decent work. But there's been a little bit, quite a lot of disappointment in the last few years, where I think they've kind of took their foot off the pedal a little bit.
Yeah, and let me just reiterate what you said is right about, and I should have mentioned that at the outset. One of my disappointments is that they haven't pushed on and tried to pick up more soccer rights, and even if it were rights where they show a match a week out of some place, right?
I guess
they consistently show it.
I mean they did pick up the Women's Super League, kind of, right? So, like, for example, this weekend
they only show those matches when there are no Premier League matches, or they want to bump something to Peacock, right? So they show it during international breaks. So for example, Manchester United Chelsea was arguably the biggest match of the season in the WSL this past weekend. They didn't show it. I watched it on the FA Player. And in fact, did not watch whatever game NBC was showing at the time. Which
I think they had it, but it was on. I think it was NBC Sports Sports.com. It wasn't on the television.
Right. I did watch it on NBC Sports.com, but they didn't. Right, but they're not aggressive about advertising that, or even the time that they've shown Chivas games in English. It's just almost this afterthought.
All right, so we've done the countdown now from number eight to number three. Actually, number four, I'm sorry. Like, so 87654. And coming in at number three this week is Tuduene. So Tuduene, also known as, or previously known as Univision Deportes. is a network that is really one of the most dominant in the United States. They cover more soccer matches than almost any other network. They've got live coverage, mostly from Mexican League, but also, of course, they have rights to the Gold Cup. They've got rights to a lot of these major tournaments. And Tudo NA, if you look at talking about production, if you look at any of the Tudo NA broadcasts, it's very, I mean, the studio looks amazing. They've got some good talent there. There's not a lot of negative things to say about Tudo NA. I think they've done a really good job at prioritizing soccer. And of course, with rights to Club America games, the most popular team in Mexico that's on US television. They've also done a fantastic job, too, with UEFA Champions League and have provided both Spanish language and English language viewers with another choice, another way of watching Champions League matches. So whether it's Barcelona against PSG, which you mean is probably in the knockout stages in a month or two, that'll probably be on Univision or Unimas. Have a great distribution network as far as providing games and making them available, oftentimes free to air or through digital, through streaming. So what about you, Kartik? Any other takeaways from Tudo NA?
Yeah, I rank them. I think I may have ranked them higher than you did. I like the fact that they show so many bumper programs and they have link programs between matches, which is something NBC has historically done quite well also. NBC, there's some clunkiness with it now, but that's I think that's part of the transition to streaming with Peacock. It's not necessarily something that I think will always be there. But I like their bumper programming. I like their commitment to soccer. I think that their production values are high. Their commentary, you know, it's obviously in Spanish. It's of a certain style. It's a style that may not a lot of fans of English football, British football, may not appreciate as much or may not enjoy as much, but there's a passion, there's an enthusiasm that comes through your screens. So, yeah, I like what 2DNA does. I know they have had, in the era of COVID, some cutbacks. So watch this space. If we do these ratings again, as I said, I rated them very highly. I think kind of that bumped them up in our overall rating. I might end up dropping them if these budget cuts are as severe as they were at BN, for instance, because as I said, I would have had BN at the very top a few years ago, yeah. And now I have them near the bottom.
So I have Tudo NA at number 4. You have them at number 2, and overall combined, we have them ranked as number 3. The other thing about Tudo NA too is Zone of Football. So if you're a fan of Champions League in the group stage or the Europa League in the early stages. That to me still is the best whip around show to really bring you all the goals and all the incidents that are happening. So much so that was so popular and so well done that CBS Sports acquired or hired Nico Cantor away from Tudo NA and away from Zona Football and had him put him on the show on the Whip Around show on CBS, the Golazo show, and put him as host. So that's how good of a job that Tudo NA are doing when they're broadcasting soccer. All right, Kartik, we are now down to our top 2. So number 2, and this is close, this is really close, number 2 is CBS Sports. And CBS Sports, I know that they are the new kid in town, so they have a fresh look. They have new talent available. They've got a lot of things that are shiny and new that really are attractive to what they're providing. But to me, at the end of the day, the commitment level that they've put into soccer with the UEFA Champions League and also within WSL too has been extraordinary. So everything from CBS Sports HQ to the CBS Sports Network and, of course, CBS All Access. But the hiring spree that they went on while other networks have been getting rid of talent and having layoffs and Bleacher Report giving back the rights to UEFA, saying, hey, we don't want the Champions League anymore. And CBS Sports stepped in. Now, not everyone likes their type of analysis or their coverage where it is more humorous. It is more fun. It is more lighthearted at times. But the talent that they have, the Roberto Martinez's of the world, the Peter Schmeichels of the world, Micah Richards, so on and so forth, Alex Scott. They've made a huge commitment, and I think in many ways too that they're on the precipice of perhaps acquiring more rights in the future, or putting in some major bids for more rights and really growing that. Yes, most of their games are not on television, but of those that are, the NWSL broadcasts, especially Kartik, I've been so impressed by those, and those look so different than the Champions League.
Yeah, and they've shown that they're able to tweak accordingly based on the league, right, and based on the competition, which I think is really important. Here's why I rank them a little lower than you did, and I agree with everything you said. I think still there's a kind of a disappointment in how little they're giving you on television live, right, and how much is being pushed to streaming. Again, if we did streaming ratings, which, as you said, we'll do in the future, I might visit this a little differently. But they're not even giving us, because of the Golasso show, which is great, but they're not even giving us, during the group stage, a live Champions League match to watch on match days. So I took the liberty to drop them pretty far down my ratings because of that. Now, I agree with everything you said, and I don't want this to the fact that my ranking dropped them from the top to be some sort of indictment of their talent or their production. I think they're very, very good. I just think since this is specifically TV and not streaming, I felt like they are giving the viewer, the TV viewer, less than we got on Turner or on Fox from those rights, and less than we got from Lifetime on the NWSL side. This having been said, we'll see now that NWSL has a regular season. Apparently, we'll have a regular season this season. They just had a draft, so hopefully their COVID situation is still what it is. But let's hope they have a more normal season. And then they are going into their what they would have been their right cycle anyway for UEFA pretty soon. So maybe that'll change, and maybe there'll be more bandwidth freed up on their television channels for soccer.
All right, drum roll, please. Hitting the big time in at the number one spot of the top soccer TV networks in the United States currently, it's ESPN, Kartik. And this is something that I know you especially love a lot of the ESPN coverage for many different reasons.
Yeah, and I will admit again, some of it is on streaming. You know, I'm thinking when we do these ratings about wow, I thought that this weekend with Gab and Dan Thomas and Jurgen Klinsmann and all these guys on the Inter Juve match. And then I remember that was actually on streaming, right? I'm thinking, okay, they did a great pregame show. They had just a killer halftime show because Juventus were terrible in the first half, for those of you who watched that match. And then sort of post-match as well. But then that was on streaming. But simultaneously, they had a game on ESPN, which was with a different set of talent, Seb Salazar, Alejandro Moreno, and others, doing the Spanish Supercopa. I still think when ESPN shows matches on television or shows programming on television, they excel. They're at a top level, and they do give us one Serie A match a week. Props. I was going to mention this on the podcast in the What We Watch section, but we'll do it now. Props to Matteo Benetti and Mark Donaldson, who did double duty on Sunday. They got up early in the morning. They did the Napoli-Fiorentina match, which was on linear television. There is, like as I said, there's a Serie A match every week on linear television. Sometimes people don't notice it because Premier League's on at the same time or whatever. And then they did the Inter-Juve match, the same duo, later in the day on ESPN Plus, which was one of the biggest matches of the season to this point in Serie A. So they still show enough matches on linear television to satisfy me, one Serie A match a week, occasional Bundesliga matches. Obviously, MLS, I thought they were they knocked it out of the park this summer with the
MLS is back.
MLS is back. And then let's talk about the U.S. Women's National Team. We've seen a game on Fox very recently. There's such a difference when ESPN shows U.S. Women's National Team matches versus Fox. Same thing with the Men's National Team, for that matter. But it's night and day. I mean, it's to the point where, and I'm going to admit this again, when U.S. games are on Fox, I watch them on 2DNA for the most part. And I do like, I guess you and I disagree about the production. I do like Stu Holden and John Strong. And occasionally I'll switch because I want to hear what Holden in particular is saying. But in terms of production levels and the studio and all of that stuff, ESPN gets it right for what they show. Now, we can complain that they have taken the League Cup off of U.S. television. They've taken the FA Cup off of U.S. television. They're taking most of the big Bundesliga matches off of U.S. television. They have taken Serie A. They have... as I said, they have one match a week, but there's, especially as competitive as that league is this season, there's usually more than one big match a week. So they're big matches that are not on television. This all having been said, I still think when they show their matches on TV, and we saw it with the Nations League, I thought that they did such a good job with the studio for the Nations League and the presentation, which quite honestly, we don't even get from Fox in tournaments sometimes. I have them at the top for me.
Yeah, I think in many ways, I think with ESPN, one of the biggest pluses about ESPN is the variety. And in terms of if you have a TV subscription to ESPN or ESPN2 or ESPN News, for those games that are on television, there's quite a wide variety. So you might get a game or two a weekend from Serie A. You might get four games a season from the Bundesliga, but then you've got the U.S. Women's National Team games. You've got Major League Soccer games. You've got the Italiana Supercoppa. You've got the Supercoppa de España. And you go down the list, you've got Copa del Rey, which is on ESPN+. But there's a wide variety of soccer. And, of course, Euro 2020 this summer, as well as much more. I think in many ways, too, I would have loved to have ESPN continue their coverage of the World Cup. This was, I mean, when ESPN lost the rights to Fox, that was a huge blow for ESPN. But I think it was also a huge blow for soccer fans in the U.S. because the level of coverage that ESPN gave to the World Cup, and not just the level of coverage, but just the, again, the thoughtful, intelligent discussion and analysis and the commitment levels to the World Cup were extraordinary. I think we'll see that same level of commitment or pretty close to it for Euro 2020 this summer. I'm really looking forward to seeing what ESPN does. Even if the stadiums are going to be empty, I'm sure they're going to put a massive effort into promoting this. I would just love them to get the rights back to the World Cup. And right now, it looks like the earliest they'll get it, unless Fox sells them back, would be World Cup 2030, which seems so far away. And by that time, who knows if who knows if cable or satellite will be in existence by then. But yeah, congratulations to ESPN for ranking as our number one soccer TV network currently in the United States for their coverage across the board. And also congratulations to the others in that top eight list. All right, let's talk about moving on to what we've been watching. Kartik, you've talked a little bit about it, but anything of note that you haven't mentioned from this past week that you want to pay attention to or let listeners know about?
Yeah, I guess my favorite match was the Barca-Bilbao match. So we've talked about that already, right? And ESPN in the Supercopa. I thought that there was a really really good presentation from ESPN. And this again, La Liga, they're stuck on BN. And I've just gone through praising what BN's coverage used to be like and said it's dropped off, but I still like facets of what they do. But again, this match on a Sunday afternoon at whatever time it was, 3 p.m. or so, Eastern time, reminded me the ability La Liga, because it's Barcelona and it's Messi, and they're only this might be it for Messi at Barcelona, the kind of blown opportunity cost for La Liga of staying on BN. Can you imagine if there was a La Liga match with Barcelona at that time a few years ago that ESPN put on its main channel?
Exactly.
Sunday afternoon.
Right, exactly. My match of the week was Juventus against Napoli in the Supercoppa Italiana.
Yeah.
on Wednesday. And Napoli, I mean, had a penalty and should have got the goal back, but they didn't. And Juventus go on to win this one. And, of course, Weston McKennie playing a key role in this match. Kartik, looking at this weekend in terms of recommendations of what to watch, for me, it is the FA Cup. The FA Cup is back on this Friday, actually, starting Friday. And that Friday game is my recommendation for the match to watch. It is Chorley Town against Wolves, so against Wolverhampton Wanderers. And Chorley Town from Lancashire in the sixth tier of English League football. And they were going up against Wolves at home. From Chorley, which is a really quaint little ground. And even though, I mean, Wolves are probably going to win this one, I'm going to tune in and hope that the coverage is just as good as it was for the match we watched between Marine FC and Tottenham Hotspur. What about you? What's your match to watch this weekend?
Well, don't sleep on Chorley Town in that match. Wolves are really poor right now. They're not. They don't even look to me like a Premier League club. That's because they have a lot of injuries. And Nuno, he's been done such a brilliant job with that club. But he likes small squads, so now it's really coming back to bite them. So if there were ever a chance to upset a Premier League club, this might be it. And it also might benefit Wolves just to get out of this competition. Same time Friday, I'm going to be watching. I'm going to keep an eye on that FA Cup match. But the match to watch for me is Mönchengladbach and Dortmund. One of these two teams will not make Champions League this next season. Maybe both won't make Champions League. I think that this is a really important match for both sides. Dortmund, it seemed like maybe they were getting back into getting back to life, and then they dropped points against Mainz, who were foot of the table, and they lose to Leverkusen, who had been struggling of late. But in that Leverkusen game, Leverkusen looked pretty rampant, and quite honestly looked like they were going to score a couple more goals. So I think that this is a high time for both sides. Mönchengladbach have been inconsistent in the league. We know in Europe they were wildly inconsistent, but they got through the group of death, so give them credit for that. But then they beat Bayern two Fridays ago. Can they push on from that and make a run at getting back into a Champions League spot? We'll see. So that's my match of the week.
All right, let's move on.
Now, that having been said, I'm sure, Chris, there will be a Serie A match that stands out, and I'm going to say next week on this podcast I should have picked whichever Serie A match. To me, the Serie A is pulling away in my mind now as the best league this season, at least in terms of what's holding my interest, what's really compelling me week in and week out.
Yeah, absolutely. With the Premier League, it is one of those things where it's, again, topsy-turvy in terms of the clubs that are going top of the table, whether it's Leicester, Man City, Liverpool, etc. Man United, of course, and it is flip-flopping all over the place. But the actual quality of the football, we saw that last weekend with Man United against Liverpool as one prime example. It's not good. It's very tight games, not very attractive, not very creative. Now and again it is when it's against lesser opposition, but it is a very tough physical league, and none of these clubs are kind of letting fly and opening up and playing open expansive football. And actually, we're seeing a little bit of that in Serie A, more so than, you mean, which has the stereotype of being kind of close-minded and very defensive and very compact and tight. But Serie A is the league that we're seeing where it is very much more open-ended football.
Yeah, I never really expected this weekend to see Conte be able to play with his fullbacks, one of which is Ashley Young, who's like 36 now, or almost 36, all the way up the pitch and really kind of dictate play. And you think that in these matches, especially, Conte is very dour and the style. But the Serie A in general is just more open now. And defenders playing higher up the pitch, midfielders pressing higher. So, yeah, nothing is – this is just sorry for this aside, Chris, but this is just something to our listeners. Nothing is ever static in terms of leagues and styles of plays around leagues and what leagues are the best leagues. I mean, things are constantly changing, and I think in the last four or five seasons, I could make the case that one year the Premier League was the best to watch, one year the Bundesliga was the best to watch, one year La Liga was, and now I think this season it's Serie A.
Yeah, which makes it watching soccer so interesting, especially when it's from around the world. You can pick and choose different leagues, different teams, and really kind of, you mean, one weekend try the FA Cup and kind of focus in on that, and then the following weekend it can be the Bundesliga. Or some weeks you can actually combine them all into one. So moving on to our TV streaming news section, and this is very applicable, but we've talked in the last few podcasts about ESPN Plus's multicast, which multicast is similar to what ESPN3 had, what they called Mosaic. NBCSports.com in the past has had it too, where it's a grid. You can watch more than one match at once. But ESPN Plus and Multicast have taken it to a whole new level, and it's available on Apple TV Plus and Xbox One. I've gone ahead, as promised, and put together a how-to video that goes into a lot of detail. So whether you have ESPN Plus and Apple TV, or even if you don't have it, it's a great step-by-step and shows you actually how it works. It does take a little bit of time to figure out all the different functions and features, but I've gone through that. It's about a 10-minute video. So to watch that, we're going to have it on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com on Thursday night, but also you can get it on YouTube. So if you go to youtube.com/worldsoccertalk, you will see the video there on that homepage, step-by-step instructions on ESPN's multicast, which will rock your world. It'll change the way that you probably experience soccer, at least for some of us. Now, in two other pieces of news, real quickly, the Bundesliga has announced, Christian Seifert, the CEO of the Bundesliga and the DFB, has said that the Bundesliga is not expecting any fans back until next season. So in the German league, usually the new season begins in late August. So that is a pretty profound statement, because you look at other leagues. Major League Soccer is probably the best example. And Major League Soccer has got to be looking at that thinking, okay, well, the Bundesliga says definitely not until next season. Don't think about fans in the stadium this season. Major League Soccer and other leagues have to consider whether to follow through on that. I don't think they will. But just one thing to note, to be able to keep an eye on this one, because this could be a very interesting story. Last but not least, CBS All Access has announced, as we've talked about on this podcast, the official name of the app is going to be changed and rebranded to Paramount Plus. Well, now we have a release date. So March 4th is going to be the launch date for Paramount Plus, which will include the Champions League, Europa League, NWSL, and a ton of content and coverage. Stephen King's The Stand series is on there, which is really good. I'm watching that right now. Just 1 week after Paramount Plus launches officially, it's going to be PSG against Barcelona. So I'm sure that game is going to be featured really prominently there on Paramount Plus. Moving on to listener mailbag. First up is Jeremy. Jeremy says, is there any news about when or if Peacock will be available natively on the Amazon Fire Stick, as opposed to using the downloader app? Also, whether it will be available on a Samsung Smart TV? Surprising that when CBS, Disney, Hulu, etc. are all available, that Peacock is not. Great podcast. So in answer to that question, nothing. We haven't heard anything. I'm sure that Peacock, which is NBC Universal, is continuing to have discussions with Amazon and Samsung about trying to get the Peacock app officially on there. Which reminds me too, I should do another video, and that other video is how, if you do have Amazon Fire TV Stick, how you can go ahead and sideload the Peacock app onto that device, so you can still watch Peacock and all the Premier League games. But that'll be another video I'll probably do in the coming weeks. Second, next up in the mailbag is JP. JP says, thank you for both, he says, thank you for the podcast. I think you've been too pessimistic about eventual fan behavior when things get back to normal. Watching games on television has given fans a better vantage point and information for many years, especially since the wide scale availability of HD. That isn't the primary reason fans attend, though. It's about the atmosphere, the camaraderie with fellow supporters, being part of the action that's in some small way, whether it's chants, taunts, distracting noises, etc. The shutdowns and isolation are creating pent-up demand for these shared experiences. When these events become open for people to attend once again, they will rush back to enjoy the game and enjoy the time with the masses and their friends, not a permanent 15% drop or so in attendance, as you speculate. Kartik, what do you think? Do you think people are going to rush back?
I don't, but someone else I did it right to the listener mailbag, but talk to me individually, articulated the same exact point of view, that there's a lot of pent-up demand and people do it for the camaraderie. The people who are more geeky about the sport, he argued to me, or have been watching on television pre-pandemic anyway, for some of the same reasons you articulated last week, right? That you get better angles, you get to see more and kind of process more of what's going on in the games, and you're watching back-to-back matches. So if you go to one match, you don't get to see the next type of thing. So... yeah, I guess it's possible. I just feel like that there's a lot of people who are going to be more germophobic, among other things, post-pandemic. And that may not be – look, when you're talking about 100% of a pie and you're saying 10 or 15%, that's not very much, although that is enough to affect bottom lines.
Yeah, I don't think that there will be a rush back. I mean, there are games already that are open to the public, that public can attend. The U.S. Women's National Team game against Colombia is one example, the game that was on Monday on FS1. If you looked at the crowds, very few spectators in the stadium, although it was open. Friday's game, U.S. Women's National Team against Colombia again in the second of these friendlies. It's a Friday night. It's in Orlando. I think, especially in Florida, you mean pretty much a lot of people have thrown kind of COVID-19 out the window and just carry on with their lives as they were before. But I think when you see the crowd on Friday, I'm not expecting it to be a large crowd at all. I'm expecting it to be the same really sporadic fans spread out. So we're not seeing it yet, and I don't think we're going to see that rush back. I still think that for the most part, most people are going to probably – some of the people that used to go are not going to go. Some of the people that did go will go, but maybe not as much as they used to. Yes, you will have some people that will go probably just as much as they did in the past, but I think that's going to be a very small minority. JP Manning says, I enjoy your pod. I'm curious about your thoughts on SiriusXM's FC channel. I've not heard you guys mention it much. The channel has the big Premier League, UEFA, and even World Cup games live, has prominent and classic pundits who have their own shows, such as Ray Hudson, Tommy Smith, Charlie Stolitano, Tony Miola, etc., covering the international and club games. MLS, Jason Davis's show, seems very influential, gets seemingly everyone's guests, and the women's games, etc. And it's 24/7. Does FC get good ratings? What are your thoughts? So we don't know what the ratings are, and it's that they're not shared publicly. But Kartik, what about you? What's your take on SiriusXM FC?
I haven't spent much time thinking about it. I mean, I've been on shows. I like the content. I like hosts like Tony Miola and Brian Dunseth and I obviously Charlie Stolitano and others. But I'm a big podcast guy, right? So I listen to The Guardian. And now Max Rushton's Guardian pod, it seems to be more than twice a week, right? They're putting out these Football Weekly excellence all the time between ESPN FC and all the pods that ESPN produces, right? Right. I listen to the Serie A Awesome podcast with Matteo Benetti and the crew there. And I listen to the Gavin Jules podcast because, I can't get enough of Marcotti for whatever reason. You know, ESPN FC show each night isn't enough. So I guess I'm just not listening to Sirius FC, XM FC, partly because of the availability of football podcasts coming from newspapers and broadcasters. That's the irony, right? I'm naming to you like all these ESPN podcasts. So I'm watching ESPN FC every day, as I think the listeners know. But I also now have gotten into these other podcasts. Caught Offside is another ESPN produced podcast that I've been listening to. So that's kind of taken me away from listening to the radio.
Yeah, I'm the same way too. I'm not a big fan of the satellite radio. So for me, when I do listen to the radio, there's so many other choices out there to listen to. So I don't listen to podcasts as much as you do, Kartik, but I will listen to Talk Sport quite often now and again, especially when I'm in the car. And for me, Talk Sport fills that void as far as giving me, at times, interesting, sometimes thoughtful, sometimes just talk, right? It's just kind of background noise where it's maybe not really that intellectual, but it's interesting or it's funny or it fills the void. But before I give some of my other opinions, I want to read the next comment, and this is from Coolio Two Foots. And he says, quality podcast like always, but what are your two thoughts on listening to matches on radio? It might sound crazy, but I find listening to matches more of a pleasure now these days over watching on television, enjoying it so much that I can watch Peacock, but instead decide to listen to Talk Sport and Five Live. Part of why I enjoy it is because of the great commentary with great banter. Plus, another great benefit is it frees me up to be active instead of stationary. Years ago, I thought radio was dead until recently, and now I realize it still really has its place. And that's my biggest criticism about SiriusXM FC. With JP Manning talking about how it has World Cup games, it has other coverage of other live games. The issue with that is the commentary is so poor. So for the World Cup, the most recent World Cup, Fox went ahead and provided the commentary to SiriusXM Radio. But instead of having their own radio commentators, what they did was they just took John Strong and his television broadcast of the game and put that on radio. Well, it's two different mediums. John Strong, his style of commentary oftentimes is when a goal is scored, he goes quiet. He doesn't say anything. He just lets the crowd noise take over. Now, if you're a radio listener and you're in traffic and you hear, I don't know, a player coming up, you know, Paul Pogba getting ready to take a shot, does the ball go in the back of the net or not? You can't see it, but you listen to the radio waiting and hoping that you get some analysis or some color description of what's happening. With the television broadcasts that are put on radio on SiriusXM FC, not all of them, but you don't get that. And that's my thing, is that radio commentary is fantastic if it's well done. Not all of them are well done. Talk Sport, I'm a bit hit and miss. Sometimes it's really good, other times it's really poor. BBC Radio 5 Live oftentimes is good, although not always. It depends who's doing the radio commentary. People like JP Della Camera and Arlo White were brought up on radio. They started their careers in soccer, commentating on radio. So they are very more talkative when they're on television. It's a different style. It doesn't work on television as well as it does on radio, which is why that some of us, myself included, have some criticism where we're like, they talk too much. They need to let kind of the pictures do the talking a little bit. So overall, SiriusXM FC, it's a, you know, a valuable service in terms of if you do have satellite radio and you're at work or on the go or whatever you're doing, it has its purpose. It has a good fit. It just is not a fit for me. All right. Next up is Bill Reese. Bill says, I watched the Liga MX match between Necaxa and San Luis last Friday. Local authorities allowed fans to attend the match up to 30% capacity. It was a boring match, but midway through the first half, I couldn't tell if the audio I was hearing was from the limited number of fans in the stadium or if that was supplemented by artificial crowd noise. Going forward, Chris and Kartik, do you think that artificial crowd noise will be here to stay even after the pandemic is over? Now that COVID has let the cat out of the bag, why wouldn't broadcasters use every trick in the book to create the most captivating broadcast possible? What do you think, Kartik?
I think yes. Thank you, Bill, for that comment. I've been thinking that myself privately, and actually have been hankering to mention it on the show when we've talked about the artificial crowd noise being pumped in, and when last week you mentioned some match, I can't remember which match it was, where that had happened, and you thought it enhanced broadcast. And I think that this is something that we're gonna see more of, or we're gonna see mics play strategically, more strategically in terms of capturing whatever crowd noise there is, natural noise, and amplifying it. So I think, yeah, in short, yes.
Yeah, we saw this week the U.S. Women's National Team game against Colombia, which we mentioned was on FS1 and had fans in the stadium. It wasn't a large number of fans, but that coverage of that game had artificial crowd noise. So you're listening to the broadcast and you're seeing goals going flying into the net and seeing the U.S. women winning 4-0, and you hear the sound of the crowd. And you think, if you didn't pay attention to it, you probably think, okay, wow, this is great, this is wonderful. You may not even think about it. But the reality is that that noise wasn't there. That noise was artificially created. Yes, there's probably a round of applause and a few cheers when the ball goes in the back of the net from that small crowd. But even with crowds, even when fans come back, like Bill says, I think it's here to stay. I think we will not only see artificial crowd noise being used to really boost the audio from the crowd, but we might even see some of the things that MLS did with the digital, almost augmented reality. I think we've seen, Serie A use a little bit more of that than in the past. And I think they're copying from Major League Soccer with what they did with MLS's back. There was a game recently I watched too where they had MLS's back was had that big Adidas soccer ball in basically on the halfway line in the center circle. There was another league I was watching this past week that did the same thing. I'm like, oh, okay, they're probably copying from Major League Soccer. Having said that, though, Kartik, I did watch Wolfsburg against Leipzig this past weekend in the Bundesliga on ESPN+, and they had no artificial crowd noise. It was just the natural sounds. It was just the players talking, communicating, the sound of the ball, kind of the echo. And I thought that was interesting, too, because that's at the other extreme where it is authentic. It's 100% natural audio. But it wasn't as exciting. It made the game sound and feel a little bit boring. So yeah, Bill, I definitely think that this is here to stay, and we'll see more and more of this, especially if it's a stadium that's half full or half empty, that they'll probably go ahead and boost the audio. But I think on the digital side too, I think we might be seeing more things in the background. So rather than having sections topped off, you will probably have them like MLS is back, it topped off digitally, and then like an actual ad placed there. So we can thank MLS for that. All right, next up is Dave Roberts. Dave says, earlier when I was at a gas station, that little TV installed in the pump showed us a 15-second promo of top goals in La Liga. I was really pleasantly surprised, especially because it was not part of a prepared news show. The credit on the promo said it was made by La Liga. Just wanted to share. And this is something that I think that La Liga North America, which is a partnership with Relevant Sports, they went ahead, I believe, and secured this deal so that in random gas stations nationwide, you will see clips of La Liga goals and other La Liga broadcasts. So there you go. Last but not least, Chris Guardino says, when it comes to watching games on TV versus in person, I would say in person is better because I can experience the atmosphere in real time and I can share the experience with others in the stadium, something that isn't really possible when I'm watching a game on TV unless I happen to be at a bar or a watch party with others, especially during the World Cup and the Euros. It should be pointed out that the majority of games I have attended are MLS games, which have a reputation for being a dull atmosphere. But I live in Seattle, where the atmosphere is comparable to that of a Premier League or Bundesliga match. I would love, once the pandemic is over, to head to Germany or England and watch either Chelsea or Dortmund play so that I can compare those environments to what I experienced at Sounders matches. Before I go, I have one question for Chris. Do you think CBS will use Nickelodeon to broadcast Champions League matches the same way they did with the Bears-Saints NFL playoff game this past week as a way of drawing younger fans to the Champions League. It's funny too, because the person that's in charge of production for the Champions League, Pete Radovich Jr., who we've interviewed on this podcast, that night when that happened on Nickelodeon with the NFL, he was, I think, tweeting some things out, saying, kind of just joking. Oh, actually, maybe it was the day afterwards when the TV ratings came in for that game, which were sky high. Kind of like joking, I think, that wouldn't this be great for the Champions League? But I don't see that happening. I think we would be rioting in the streets. We would have our pitchforks out. We would be crying holy hell. I think NFL, it probably fits better. I think it'd be more acceptable. But for soccer fans, I think we would be absolutely outraged if that happens. What do you think, Kartik? Nickelodeon in the future for you?
I think it's a decent idea. I'd try it because, look, a lot of these people who watch Champions League are hooked on the Champions League by playing the FIFA video game. So there's already kind of a cartoonish aspect to that. I actually think it might be a pretty natural fit. Soccer fans demographically tend to be younger.
But imagine the English fans, though. I mean, they make fun of...
Yeah, no, I mean, the traditional British fans, no. They'll mock it, and they'll mock the U.S. forever for showing a match.
We would never hear the end of it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Right. So, but if you could take the critiques of the British purists in terms of how... but they're the same people. I said that maybe for them, the 2DNA commentary isn't very... They don't like it because it's too excitable. If you take that out of it, I think it would actually be a pretty good idea. I would encourage CBS and the team over there to maybe try it.
No, don't listen to Kartik. No, I'm just joking. But yeah, it's I'm sure it's something. I'm sure they've had a conversation about it and probably joked about it and thought like, hey, why not? I don't know. I just see too much bad press from that one. But maybe it's just me. All right, we want you to have your say. Get your opinions in on our rankings, what you thought of it, as well as Nickelodeon and the Champions League and anything else that we've brought up on the show, as well as anything else you'd like to talk about when it comes to TV broadcasts or streaming broadcasts of soccer and the beautiful game in the United States. We'd love to hear from you. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And Kartik, let's finish it here. We've had a big episode, this one. A lot of football to look forward to this weekend from around the world. And the title races are heating up. So for listeners who are tuning in and wondering what to do and what you'll do, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.